Welcome to What the Paper Said, in which I, Patrick Crozier, skim through the Times from 100 years ago, read some of the articles and comment on the ones I find interesting. In this episode, the week ending the 18th of November 1923, the aftermath of the Beer Hall, or should that be Ludendorff, coup. But first, some of the other stuff that's caught my attention this week. Britain will be having a general election in December. This may seem odd given that it is only a year since the last one, but Prime Minister Baldwin is determined to introduce tariffs, which he considers a way to reduce Britain's stubbornly high unemployment. Winston Churchill is unimpressed. This is from Saturday the 17th.
"It is thrust upon us, as a crude issue of party politics, and a vague mandate is to be snatched, and a snap election pressed forward, with every circumstance of haste. Free trade is to be tried by drumhead court-martial, and shot at dawn."
The BBC, or British Broadcasting Company, as it is at this time, is celebrating its first birthday. All seem happy, perhaps because most of its content involves music. Armistice Day was commemorated in a year when the 11th of November fell on a Sunday. Some unauthorised poppy sellers were arrested. There's a movie out about the British invasion of Palestine in the war. Talking of which, the Arabs have refused all British proposals for the government of the Mandate. Arabs being obstructive in Palestine. Who would have thought it? As for the Jews, they'd better look out. In Dublin, someone is going around murdering them. An Aston Villa player has been shot dead. Troy Deeney was unavailable for comment. I found some interesting information in the advertisements. Well, interesting to me. Harrods were advertising a pair of Oxford shoes for 30 shillings. 30 shillings would buy you slightly less than a third of an ounce of gold, which today is about £500. But if you apply the Crozier fudge factor to account for the pound being vastly overvalued, well, as it was then, you get to £250. A pair of Oxford shoes from Harrods today would set you back some £300. I also, for the first time, saw an advert for a wireless receiver, Marconi as it happens. That would set you back £20 or 4 ounces of gold, or about £3,000 once you've applied the fudge factor. And yet there are something like a million licences, and only one broadcaster. In the aftermath of the Beer Hall putsch of last week, Hitler has been captured and remanded in Landsberg prison. The Times reckons it is unlikely that he will be executed. The Times also publishes an article from a correspondent. This is from Monday the 12th of November. Herr von Kahr, he's the dictator of Bavaria, received yesterday representatives of the press and explained to them the course events taken in Munich from the moment when Herr Hitler broke into the meeting in the wine cellar, there's a wine cellar now, is it, which von Kahr was addressing on Thursday evening and announced the nationalist coup. Obviously the term press conference is yet to enter the language. Von Kahr explained his actions. "These protestations do not convince the great bulk of the population. Not unjustifiably, the general impression is that Herr von Kahr and General von Lossow," his military sidekick, "had encouraged and even helped the nationalist storm troops and the bands of students," nutty students, eh? Who would have thought it? "Who marched through the streets on Friday morning and were fired on by the Reichswehr on the orders of these two men, who had announced the night before their support of the revolutionary movement. That mere boys in many cases were shot down almost in cold blood is a crime for which Herr von Kahr can scarcely hope to be acquitted." That is harsh, to say the least. First of all, von Kahr and von Lossow announced their support under duress. Second, even at this distance, it is difficult to tell how far the Beer Hall putsch might have got if the revolutionaries, as the Times accurately calls them, had not been fired on. By the way, the gunfire went both ways. He goes on. "Ever since the defeat of the rebels on Friday, demonstrations against von Kahr have continued in the streets, and the troops and police have had the greatest difficulty in maintaining order. Many of the demonstrators are obviously remnants of Hitler's stormtroops, although they are careful to wear no uniform or badges. On Friday afternoon, mounted green police with lances were chasing small bands of cyclists who were parading the streets shouting, "Down with Kahr the traitor!" Students from the universities with their professors paraded last night shouting, "Down with Kahr," and other epithets such as Judas. This morning I saw a group of apparently respectable citizens spitting on the green police, who are trying tactfully to move on the crowd. Leaflets are being posted up by cyclists of the Hitler Party, stating that companies of the Reichswehr have mutinied against Herr von Kahr's orders and that the men on duty are imported from Soviet Saxony. He then talks about the attempted coup itself. The first action of the Hitler dictatorship was to dispatch an armoured car and machine gun detachments to the offices of the Münchner Post, which were almost completely wrecked, machinery and books being ruthlessly destroyed. During the night, gangs of Hitlerites stormed through the town and invaded the first-class restaurants and hotels in search of Jews or profiteers. Fortunately, there was no bloodshed, although a considerable amount of promiscuous shooting occurred. On Friday morning, I drove through the town at 9 o'clock with one of Hitler's staff in a requisitioned car, one of many which the new government had taken over. The streets were filled with Hitler's men posting up proclamations. The bridges were all heavily guarded, and the town appeared to be at the mercy of the Hitler forces. They drove to the Bürgerbräu Keller, Hitler's headquarters. Everywhere the utmost enthusiasm and optimism prevailed. Upstairs in a small, barely furnished room were Ludendorff, Hitler, and half a dozen officers with maps and plans. Hitler received me courteously, but was obviously overwrought and dead tired. Poor dear. He scarcely seemed to fill the part, this little man in an old, waterproof coat with a revolver at his hip, unshaven and with disordered hair, and so hoarse that he could scarcely speak. Ludendorff also seemed anxious and preoccupied. Then the mood changed. When I arrived back in the centre of the town, the reason for this sudden change was clear. During the morning, in the safety of police headquarters, Herr von Kahr and General von Lossow had had time to reconsider their pledges to Hitler. Posters signed by Herr von Kahr appeared, stating that Hitler and the Prussian Ludendorff were traitors, that the consent which had been forced from Herr von Kahr at the pistol's point was withdrawn, that the Reichswehr and the Landespolizei were loyal to the Kahr government, and that Hitler's forces and all similar organisations of stormtroops must be dissolved forthwith. Hitler and his advisers evidently refused to believe that the game was lost. With Hitler and Ludendorff, the latter dressed in civilian clothes with a green felt hat, at their head, some 5,000 nationalists began a march through the town. Why? The only reason I can think of is to confront forces loyal to the government, rather like Napoleon did in the movie Waterloo. Wikipedia claims that they were attempting to take over the Bavarian Defence Ministry. If so, why the numbers? Almost simultaneously, Reichswehr reinforcements arrived from various outlying depots. A strong detachment with an armoured car and machine guns took up a position in the Odeonsplatz. The Hitler army, many of them entirely unsuspectingly, marched past the National Opera House and in the narrow streets leading to the Odeonsplatz, received the command to halt. From whom? Hitler or the Reichswehr? Followed almost immediately by rifle and machine gun fire. Hitler was wounded slightly in the arm and disappeared in a motor car. It looked as though orders had been given that Ludendorff was not to be fired on. According to an eyewitness, Ludendorff was taking no risks and threw himself flat on the paving stones. Afterwards, he walked up to a Reichswehr officer and was taken into custody. He was kept in the residence, it's a building in Munich, until 5 o'clock, when he was released on parole. Hitler's men fled in all directions, many throwing away their arms. In less than half an hour, complete order was restored. Anyway, that's all for this week. I aim to have something up next week, but I promise nothing.